welcome to episode 36 of the Card Hoarder Podcast. This is the weekly show about Magic the Gathering online news and community. You can find the show every week on iTunes, MTGcast, and on our home site, cardhoarder.com. You can check out other content like daily Team Card Hoarder YouTube videos and Magic Online guides. Check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles with around-the-clock customer service. My name is Kai Arm, the host and editor for the podcast. Joined as I am always by my two co-hosts. First up, Nathaniel. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing, Connor?
Oh, I'm doing great. Did you have a good Christmas?
That was pretty good. We drove down to Jersey. We got a flat tire about 30 miles in. So that set us back about 3 hours. And so the whole journey took me about 9 hours, which was...
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah, pretty rough. But otherwise, it was good.
Good. All right. If that's the worst, then okay. That's good.
Well, everyone was sick, too. I mean, I guess that's not too good. It was like a TB ward. Everybody coughing all over the place, but... Other than those two things, I'll say. It was good. How about you?
Yeah, great Christmas. I'm just glad it's over. Now that like wedding and Christmas is over, I could just like breathe now. No more thank you cards, no more presents. Now I'm just like, all right, everything's covered. Had a good Christmas. I didn't get sick, so that's...
Nice.
Yep, very happy. So also joining me from Ireland, my other co-host, Dave. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Connor?
Doing great. So in the previous episode, you said you would snap off the holiday PTQs. Did you follow through?
I could not, unfortunately. I wanted to. Family obligations got it in the way. Could not play either. Unfortunately.
Just think of it this way, Dave. It could have just been 3 rounds, you know? Or yeah, even 2. 0-2 drop, boom, we're done.
Yeah, I was tempted. So I couldn't on the... Whatever day, the first day, the Saturday, I couldn't because I was going out with my girlfriend and... Her friends have a tradition, you know, Christmas Eve drinks, and then a bunch of them go to midnight mass as well, which is really funny. So half of the, we're in a kind of small town on the outskirts of Dublin, and half of the mass must be drunk, and it's the most it's the most Irish thing I've ever heard in my damn life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I couldn't go because, you know, it's Christmas Eve. Places aren't going to be open too late. I don't want to be playing till 9, 10 o'clock and only get one drink in, so I couldn't do that. I was very tempted to bring the laptop to the family's house. Just play.
You know, when you need it to be fast, that's always the time you make a late run, so it's probably just as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, now that I think about it, do you know how many number or how many people were in the second mocks open? We didn't get to discuss about that.
I think it was 100 more than the first one.
Okay.
But still not capped.
No, which means I think it was still about 100 away from being capped. So I think the first one was like 200 away from being capped. This was 100 away from being capped.
So closer, but still not there.
Yeah.
We're getting there. But other than that, good Christmas?
Yeah, I really enjoyed my Christmas. Pretty normal stuff.
Normal stuff is good sometimes, though.
Yeah.
So as mentioned last week, this episode is going to be our year in review. There's been a lot of year in reviews by other content creators, but of course... We focus more on Magic Online, so we're going to talk more about Magic Online topics, but we're going to talk about the game as a whole in 2016 as well. So a lot to cover this year. You know, we had a lot of different products released from Wizards of the Coast this year, some casual, mostly competitive, and especially there was a ton of new initiatives on the Magic Online front. So to narrow down all the changes, we came up with our own top 5 most impactful changes for Magic Online in 2016. So we're going to start, though, with a few honorable mentions that just couldn't quite make the list. So one of you want to mention one of your honorable mentions first?
Yeah, I'd like to mention mine first. Honorable mention, and probably not on the list because we haven't seen too much change yet. Chris Cox is the new president from Microsoft of Wizards of the Coast. We thought at the time this has to have big changes on Magic Online. You know, he was president. He worked in Microsoft. He has know-how in the industry. We just haven't seen much of that reflect on Magic Online. A lot of that is down to rumors to a new platform coming out for Magic Online. There's all this stuff going around, so we don't know. But regardless, this was big news during the year and caused a lot of buzz for the Magic Online community.
Yeah, we talked about this all the way back in episode 1. Wow, that was so long ago.
Really?
Was that episode 1?
Episode 1.
Wow.
Unless like somebody hacked into our show notes and changed the show.
Probably not. I don't think anybody would care enough to do that. Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know if any of the changes have resulted from that. It doesn't seem like any big paradigm shifts at all. So maybe it's just, you know, they plan so far ahead that we don't see it yet. It's tough to know.
Who knows? We'll see how it goes. And we only got to see him in that it was like the world's like intro video too. So there's just like hasn't been too many opportunities for him to talk in front of an audience. And yeah, like we said, make the changes. So that's why we put it as an honorable mention outside of our top five list. So Nathaniel, do you have a honorable mention of yourself?
Sure, I would go with a broader definition, but community initiatives. Which I think probably encompasses a few different things. The Community Super League was one. I think that was pretty well received. The pre-releases they've been doing, also I think very well received. They brought different content ambassadors. I remember Dave's buddies, the Windmill Slam guys, got invited to, I think it was PAX West, possibly.
Yeah.
So those sorts of things I think were all good. And then, of course, the lack of the Community Cup for Magic Online or at all. As a detractor, but the community initiatives are definitely up there in terms of impact, I think, on the game and on Magic Online as well.
Okay. Well, I'll go with my honorable mention, which was the year of modern flashback drafts. This almost made the list, but it just didn't seem to be too impactful compared to our other ones, and not too much to say about it. But what I thought was very impactful about the flashback drafts is it kind of showed the initiative of Wizards to have a long-term plan for things, because usually they'll just, like, what they did for 2017 is here are the next, like, month, and here are the events there. We're not going to tell you what's going down in June or whatever, but for 2016, they're like, here's the schedule of every format that we're going to run when flashback drafts are not going to run, and they basically gave the whole schedule through the whole year, and they stuck by it, which was, I thought, was, like, pretty interesting. And it gave you time to, like, one, schedule events. Yeah, and it, I guess it, the other thing it showed is how often do they test these new formats when they come out, because there's numerous bugs with different formats, Innistrad being the most notable when Memory's Journey was reportedly bugged. And I had planned on streaming a lot of Innistrad, and after hearing that, it just really just got me down about the format, and I actually didn't end up streaming it at all. I played like one draft, I think. It wasn't as exciting. Same thing with Return to Ravnica, not having Common Bond in there. It's just the point of these formats was to kind of give you nostalgic for these formats, and losing a piece from that, it definitely hinders the experience. So overall, I was very happy with the whole flashback draft experience, just because it was a little bit of something new, not these random formats you get once in a while. Here's a schedule. Here's, we plan this out. Have fun with it.
Yeah, it's nice to have a backbone as well to your schedule. Sometimes I find Magic Online schedule can be a bit, you know, all over the place. It feels like they've had to throw some stuff in, but this year we actually knew for a year when certain events would come up, and that's kind of cool.
All right, well, I think that will do it with honorable mentions. So let's jump right into our list with number five, which we decided to be, we lumped in everything to be gauntlets. The first gauntlet we had was all the way back in, I think it was February. I think that's
Eldrazi Winter, right?
Eldrazi Winter, yeah. So we had,
whoops.
What a way to start off the program with. Yeah, it was the first Pro Tour gauntlet was the Eldrazi Winter. So that was a good way to start it off.
Unfortunately, it was a very good idea, but it was, we didn't know until later iterations. There was a couple of, along with the Eldrazi Winter in this one, there was also a deck that its owner said could not be played on Magic Online, the Infinite Life combo, because you can't go infinite with life on Magic Online. So there are certain matchups that usually are kind of unlosable for the deck because it's really easy to combo off. But because you could only gain a couple hundred life if you're spending 4 or 5 minutes to do it, it didn't matter because decks can beat a couple hundred life. They can't beat a million, and you could never get to a million. One, because Magic Online won't let you get to a million life, and two, because it's just beatable. You just gain control of the board and start beating down. So there was a couple of small errors, and there was obviously everyone wanted to just get the Eldrazi deck. That was the big deck of that tournament, plus very obviously the best deck of that tournament. But we still, I think, could see that it was a good format, and we were just waiting for better decks to be introduced to it. And it eventually was, and I think it's been quite a success for the year.
And they also played around with the concept too, because they eventually did the Legacy Gauntlet, which I thought was successful out of all the gauntlets they had this year, because they tried something a little different. I wouldn't say the popularity of these gauntlets was overwhelming, but it just showed that they were kind of like how they did with the flashback drafts, so that they're opening new design space for making online different. More of a unique experience, and I thought that's what kind of gauntlets did. And it gives chance for players that don't have cards to kind of jump in. It kind of has like this subscription model feel to it, but only for like a limited time.
You've got to give props to them for, because we all thought the idea was great, and they got pretty unlucky with the Eldrazi situation. But you got to give props for, you know, sticking to it. And I think the most exciting part about the idea is what it can be. And, you know, you mentioned there with the Legacy event, and we recently just heard them going back about old standard gauntlets and kind of developing those. And I think exploring that space, which is really what can you do on Magic Online that you cannot do in paper, that is really an almost unexplored space completely by WotC within Magic Online, but one that can kind of bring something new to the table for the people that have some fair and some not fair opinions on what Magic Online is and how much it is, etc. So I think it's exciting for the future of the game if they start exploring those types of things, because I think that ultimately will help Magic Online grow in customer base and user satisfaction if they can find, explore, and monetize the exciting things like this or Momi or whatever that you can do online that you can't do in paper.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what, when we wrap up this episode, I think that's kind of where I'm at with paper. Kind of been disappointed with paper this year just because of the lack of innovation. And I think Gauntlets is kind of like the step, like, yeah, if you try to innovate, or not even like innovate, this is just taking like an old idea, but just like finally implementing it. Playing old standard decks against each other is not new. I've seen people do it at tournaments all the time, but to make this process streamlined, they're like, here are the events, we're going to try them out, they're going to be Phantom, and they're going to be play points, stuff like that. You know, not huge like prize payouts, but just kind of just to have fun on Magic Online. That's basically what they're for. You don't get QPs or anything like that. I'm liking the implementation so far. It's not too high on the list, I think, mainly just because, like I said, I don't think the popularity was overwhelming with these events, but the promise of 2017 is it could be sky high, and it could be up very high in the list for 2017. So we will see where that goes for that.
I would love to see their numbers. I've said that before in episodes. I would absolutely love to see what kind of numbers these events are doing, because now we get to see what the numbers, something else we're going to talk about probably today's leagues. It would be great to see numbers out of events like this, but you can't.
Yeah, but the numbers in leagues are pretty deceptive, though.
They can be, but you can see an overall popularity if one stays high for a long time.
Yeah.
That's not the exact number that I think people are playing or stuff like that. I just want to see, are they as popular as Modern? Are they as popular as Legacy? Are they as popular as Kaladesh Draft? Just so we can compare. So maybe they'll be in league formats a little more in the future, because a lot of things are on Magic Online. I don't know. That might lead to too many mirror matches and stuff like that. You don't want an actual Eldrazi winter where you win one round because you're the Eldrazi deck, and then you face four more Eldrazi decks because they're the only decks capable of winning rounds of Magic. Yeah, I would love to have the information for how popular these are. We love them. I think other people should love them, and I have played them before, but that's not necessarily the case, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think we necessarily need the numbers, maybe. A lot of times you can kind of get a general perception either through Twitter or what people are streaming as well. That's kind of how I kind of gauged perception of these, like, of the gauntlets this year. That's why I, in my opinion, it seemed like the Legacy one hit home most, just because I saw the most response on Twitter, and I saw more people stream that as well. Even I streamed a little bit of it too, so it's probably me being a little biased. But
I was thinking, you probably just follow people that talk about Legacy a lot because you're a Legacy person, but maybe not. I mean, that was the one I heard least about because I don't really follow Legacy at all. But I agree with you. I totally agree with your assessment, though, your overall assessment, that I don't think they were a home run, but the idea is exciting, and the avenues that they can explore with it, I think, are exciting. So it deserves inclusion in the top five, in my opinion.
Yep, definitely. I'm glad we included it. Yeah, perceptions can be very different, as we're going to see in this next number, because my perception is very different on this entry in compared to David Nathaniel's, I think. So number four of our most impactful things on Magic Online for this year is the changes to Redemption. That is number four. So Nathaniel, I think you are kind of most passionate about this topic, so I would like you to lead why this was number four.
Why is this impactful? This I mean, I would argue it's more impactful, if not the most impactful, then certainly the second most. But we have it at four because I was downvoted.
Well, I want to preface, I downvoted a little bit just because we have not experienced these changes yet, because they do not go into effect until Amakat comes alive. Because Kaladesh is the first set that's going to be cut off early.
Right, because Kaladesh has not been cut off yet, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, and the effects of what that brings, I think, and granted, I have not explored them in detail, I assume that the effects are already being felt in some way or another. So I guess I'd have to talk to some people that do more redeeming than I do or follow the prices more closely than I do to understand. But the reason why I think this is among the most impactful changes is because the Magic Online experience and the Magic Online economy was built on the foundation of redemption existing. And I think it's very clear with this change that it is not going to stay. Wizards, despite the uproar, kind of packaged this with one of the other big announcements that we'll talk about that have more mainstream applicability than Redemption does. But Wizards has remained silent on the changes to Redemption, what their plans are for Redemption. But I personally think it's very clear that they don't want to have it anymore, even though it's kind of the promise that built Magic Online to begin with. So I think it's a huge change. It's interesting to me, especially because a lot of people don't redeem sets. A lot of individuals don't redeem sets, especially after they significantly increase the price to redeem, which I've mentioned many times. It's kind of how WotC does it. Change it, make something significantly less desirable, watch the demand go down significantly, and then say, oh, look, nobody cares about this anymore, we'll take it away. I don't think that'll work quite the same way for Redemption, but that is what happened. And we saw what happened to the entire economy almost imploding when that initial change happened. Anyway, my point there was that people tend to think that it doesn't affect them because they don't redeem sets. But it affects every single player. It affects the secondary market in both paper and Magic Online very significantly, and I think a lot of players don't understand that. And so it's kind of like one of those things where people don't know that they should be caring about it, and so the uproar wasn't as big because the implications aren't as easily and readily understood, and therefore something that has kind of, I would say WotC has gotten away with it, at least for now.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, still haven't felt it yet, and I think what you were kind of talking about is the changing the redemption fee to like $25 was kind of like the more impactful change, and that's why it kind of softened the blow of this change, I thought. And I thought the $25 was already the start of it, and this was just kind of like...
It may be the continuation of the plan, and the plan may be to just get rid of it entirely. But this was not a gradual shift here. This was a major change.
This is a major change. I will agree with that.
I mean, regardless of whether or not we've seen the effects yet, I mean, I don't think you want to see the effects and then complain about it. You know, it's the effects are the types of very bad things that happen with large changes that will affect people. And I think once and if, I mean, I guess it's not a guarantee that, you know, the Magic Online economy can't sustain itself. But I would be surprised if it can at this point. I think it needed to be cultivated to that degree so that it could absorb taking away redemption, or that taking away redemption wouldn't matter. I don't think that happened. So I think it will have more impact than we want it to in both paper and online. I think it's interesting hearing other people's perspectives about it, because obviously I'm closer to redemption. A lot of people actually seem to think that dealers make money off redemption, which is not the case. Some dealers do, but most dealers don't. Like we card hoarders do not make money on redemption. I've never redeemed a set in my life. I've certainly sold sets to people that do redeeming, and I suppose you could argue that affects things. But I mean, that's kind of my point, is that whole economy, the whole redemption economy, is in the hands of a few people. So, but they do very large volume, and it affects the prices online. So the amount of the size of this thing really affects prices for everybody, but people just don't seem to grasp how and if and that it does affect their experience with Magic Online.
It's hard to grasp it too, to be fair as well.
Yeah. It is, I agree.
This is one of the the changes that have only happened quite recently, I guess, about 10 weeks ago, I think we talked about it in episode 25. So this it hasn't taken effect yet. We've talked about it recently. I think I've changed my mind, not completely on it, but a little bit. If I remember, I was quite negative about the way they were rolling it out, just like Nathaniel on the episode in question. I still think it's exciting if they do it right. I'm not saying it's the correct thing to do. I think they're still going about it in a negative way. They're not being transparent. They're not telling us really why Redemption needs to change. They're just saying it's going to. And I do agree with Nathaniel that they're probably doing it in order to make it kind of useless, and then when it is useless, take it away. But if they're planning on taking it away, it probably means a lot for the next platform Magic is going to be on, or if we stay on this platform, it's going to change the way the market works. It's going to change the prices of cards, which means cards might get cheaper, which could be seen as positive or negative. It is a massive change. And again, the only reason why this isn't higher on the list is because we don't know how it's going to... We have a good idea what it's going to do to the economy. We have a good idea what Wizard's plan is, but we don't know for sure what it's going to do in the short or long term, because it hasn't affected, as we said, it hasn't affected Kaladesh yet. It's affecting... Aether Revolt is the first set it's affecting, right? That's out January 20th. So yeah, that's the first...
Well, I think it affects Kaladesh, but Kaladesh has not gone off Redemption yet.
Right. Yeah, the second set's always the one that kind of gets the shaft.
Yeah.
As we would say.
Well, I mean, the difference between like 6 months on Redemption and a year and a half is very large difference.
Yeah,
it is very large, but like it's so much easier to get cards for sets now, especially big sets like Kaladesh.
Yeah, Kaladesh is also going to be drafted twice. So the card price is affected.
Are you guys talking about online or paper?
Online.
Yeah, I think it's still going to affect it. We're still going to see the effect when the turnabout is like this. But the second set is definitely going to be a sharper effect, right? Because we're only going to get to draft that for...
Yeah, presumably.
Yeah,
presumably, yes.
It's going to be a very short amount of time drafting it before, bam, the Redemption's gone. But yeah, as I said, this would probably be really high up on the list. If not, if we have seen what it's done to Magic Online, we won't know for a couple more months.
Who knows too if Wizards just changed their policy on this, but I highly agree with both of you that they haven't been transparent about this at all, and I don't think they're going to change this at all. So, but you could say about this about all of our list as well, but I don't think that would change most of the list.
They're not going to be more transparent about it unless there's more of an uproar about it.
Right.
I'm just saying, people should be looking for additional transparency on this point in particular, because it is such a pillar of the economy. But I don't know if it was so masterfully planned in conjunction with Treasure Chests being announced as well, or if it becomes a topic that the wider public is clamoring about because, say, the economy's crashed or paper supply is really difficult to come by or whatever, then... I don't say it's too late, but I mean, we should have had that uproar before to stave off getting in that situation, or at least understand it more.
One of the reasons they might never be transparent about stuff like this is because the reasoning behind the change might be we want Magic Online cards not to be redeemable, because then the prices aren't connected. We talked about this a bit in the episode. The prices won't be connected to real life cards, so there won't be a floor on prices anymore, which means Magic card prices are free to plummet, which means it might be...
Magic Online card prices, you mean?
Yeah, sorry, Magic Online card prices could be free to plummet. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen. I'm saying this is what could be their long-term plan. And they don't want to be transparent, because if they're like, listen, guys, we want to make Magic Online cheaper, and we're going to do that by cutting Redemption, a bunch of dealers would just sell all their cards and move out. They're like, well, we have to sell all our cards now. They might necessarily not become dealers, but they might say, we have to sell all our cards and stop buying them now, because our inventory is going to become, worth a lot less if Magic Online overall becomes cheaper, and they don't want to create that panic, if that makes some sense.
You see that panic, or what looks like panic, every time a big announcement happens.
Yeah.
There was one last year. I can't remember what the announcement was last year. Some change last year, or maybe it was the year before.
Yeah, that was like Treasure Chests and Play Points last year.
Oh, Play Points. That's right. Play Points.
But that was the year before, though.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I remember last year we were buying so many collections. It was scary. And I was like, we got to try to find the cash to keep buying collections, because if we stop buying collections, like, that's gonna add to the panic. So anyway, yeah, the panics really hurt. They hurt everybody, but I mean, imagine you're the person that spent $1,000 on your collection and now it's worth $500. That is pretty devastating. Dealers, not all dealers, but you know, the bigger dealers can take losses. It's just, you know, we expect it. It's part of what's going to happen. And I know a lot of people think, you know, when I get up in arms, or when dealers get up in arms about stuff like this, it's because we don't want to lose money. But I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, we only lose money if it stops being a business. You know what I mean? I mean, like, yes, the inventory value goes down, but whatever, you know, we can sell more now because it's cheaper. It's really stability that we're after. But it really does hurt the people that have bought cards from us or have invested in cards and have their collection, and they have these types of announcements that drop prices across the board 20-30%. You know, that's pretty devastating for the average Magic Online player.
There's a really key word that you just said there that actually I really agree with, is stability. The reason, I guess, a big reason then why this would be one of the more impactful changes is that, like, this does not help Magic Online be more stable, as the economy to be more stable, juggling with all these other factors that just happened this year as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, if you change so much, there's going to be so much more uncertainty, instead of like one change, like, we might be uncertain about this. But there's like three of these big changes that are mentioned in our list. Like, it kind of, each one kind of makes you uncertain in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on. So our number three on our list is the new MOX system. And a lot goes into these changes, because this was a huge change, because the year before there was a lot of negative feedback about the previous MOX system. And Dave, I'm sure you can go a little bit into more detail of like why the previous MOX system was bad, because I kind of remember it's because like pro players like were get like free invites to certain events or something like that.
Yeah,
I was never a part of the system, so I can't really say. But this year we had a lot of inclusions that I'll just mention real quick before I'll throw it to you, Dave, that, you know, the new system introduced, you know, we got the MOX opens, and there's no more MOX promos, which was pretty big. They changed, like, QPs were taken away from certain events as well. And a really small change was, like, they put some events on Fridays, which is, I'll mention at the end of the episode, there's a MOX monthly on Friday this week. So, you know, there was a bunch, and the prize pool for the whole championship is also, there's a lot that went into this announcement. So Dave, why was this one of the most impactful things that happened to Magic Online this year?
So I think for a very long time, the MOX has been a fantastic event for Magic Online. It's the oldest something I can think on Magic Online that you can do online, but you can't do in real life. You can't qualify for the MOX in real life. It's own personal pro tour almost for Magic Online, and rewarding people who maybe aren't necessarily doing well in their life, but are, you know, renowned Magic Online grinders. And a lot of very good players came through that system. People like Reed Duke and Brad Nelson have played in it and have come up through Magic Online. It was a pretty prestigious event. And last year they made, this year they made some huge changes to it at the start of the year. I think before we started podcasting anyway. Yeah, probably way before that. And the changes were bringing in this leaderboard system to help people qualify. So there was a certain amount of qualifiers to get to the MOX, and then there was a leaderboard that qualified other people. Also, under the old system, you used to get QPs, which let you do a monthly event, or you could get less QPs. I think it used to be 30 and 15. If you got less, you could play a preliminary event that qualified you for a monthly event, and the winner of the monthly would go to the MOX, the big event. But they changed it so you had to play qualifiers always to get into a quarterly, and then the top two of the quarterlies would qualify and the rest was on the leaderboard. Now, this is all fine. It's very similar to how we're qualifying now. But Platinum Pros got to just skip the qualifiers and play the monthlies, the quarterlies. The quarterlies, even if you didn't have fantastic finishes, got you leaderboard points, which means, because you are a pro from outside Magic Online who doesn't necessarily grind Magic Online, you got an advantage over the average grinder because you're qualifying safe for these quarterlies, which were already hard to qualify for. Now, this got people in uproar. And in practice, if you look at the leaderboard, there are a lot of very big names in Magic on that leaderboard when it ended. But it wasn't hugely impactful, and there were just a lot of good players there, and there were a couple of grinders. It's just this system was always in place to help Magic Online grinders, and all of a sudden it became a reward for Platinum Pros, and you saw people coming out of the woodwork and Platinum Pros that hadn't played Magic Online much come, they played, they complain, they'd leave, they'd tell you how bad it is. And while that might have been their goal to get people involved, the community felt pretty betrayed. And why it's important that these changes were made, in my opinion, is even though the attendance of these events were still high, because it's essentially a free event, you might as well play if you're getting QPs, the community was still listened to. A lot of people complained, and the system was changed to remove the Platinum Pro stuff. There were other tweaks made to it. The opens were introduced, which was something people were a type of event that people have been asking for a while. And it feels like we were, as a community, listened to, even though maybe the statistics said that the other event was a fine success. That is why I thought it was a very important change this year and why it's number 3 on our list, right?
Yeah. What's the perception now? Like, how do you feel about it? How have you heard, like, have you heard any negative feedback so far from it? I mean, we've only been in, like a month into this new system,
right? Yeah, there's not too many. The opens have just happened. Now there's the same. There's always going to be complaints. It's Magic Online. Nerds are complainers. I'm a complainer. Every nerd I've met ever has been a complainer. People still think these events are too long. People still think these events are, you know, they don't have good prize structures, which is just true for everything in Magic. And that's not necessarily wrong. But the complaints now happening about the event are the complaints that happen about every Magic event and can be worked on as a whole, opposed to individual things to the mocks, which people are just quiet about now. And usually when I hear no complaints and no compliments, it's still usually a good thing in Magic not to have these people complain. And there's also a lot of small changes. There's stuff like the monthly is now capped at 7 rounds, I think. And if you have a certain record, I think it's 7 or 8 rounds. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. But now if you go X2, you make it into the quarterly or something like that. It's X2 or X1. I can't remember. So they've taken a leaf from the PPTQs, which I think have been highly successful all year in Magic Online, and used that for their Mox event. And there's other small tweaks to prizes and stuff like that, which got a little bit better. And overall, it feels like you don't always want to do trial and error. You don't want them to put out a bad event, it go badly, and have to change it. But it feels like they learned from a lot of the mistakes, not only with their big overhaul of the system, but lots of small things like how the monthlies function now and how people qualify through opens. They've listened to feedback, and overall, there's lots of small and a large overarching kind of change to the system, which is encouraging for Magic Online.
I'm hoping that, like, when we digest it more, that people don't come out and kind of bash it too much, because originally it was kind of praise of the changes.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful for 2017 that this kind of continues its momentum. And, you know, yeah, as you said, the mock system, it's very important to Magic Online and competitive Magic. So
my recollection is my only complaint about the system, or like legitimate complaint or big complaint or whatever, was reducing the amount of Pro Tour invites that are given out. That might have happened the iteration before. I can't remember exactly when that happened, but I do believe that there are fewer Pro Tour spots being given out via the MOX system now. Moving forward, as far as the MOX goes, I think we want to ensure that those in charge of Magic Online keep it as a marquee event for Magic Online players, not necessarily, you know, something that the pros get as a perk or as a free perk or whatever, which I think they had kind of moved back away from, which was the original complaint. But, you know, finding ways to make it more marquee for Magic Online specifically and have the prestige that perhaps we would like it to have in comparison to, say, the Pro Tour or offering pro points. I mean, I don't know exactly what the answer is. I don't know if you try to couple it with a Pro Tour, try to make it its own thing. You know, I think that finding ways to make that the marquee event and make it seem like the marquee event, I think would be the best route forward for the MOX. But they definitely undid a lot of very bad changes they made the year before. And so we can at least acknowledge that as a positive move and hopeful move for the future.
All right. Well, I think we're going to move on to number 2 here, which is probably, it could be argued that this is number 1. It's hard to say that our number 1, it can't be number 1 just because this was the first year of it coming out. But number 2, this change is, of course, the treasure chest, which You know, we've experienced, what, 2 months of it now? It came out in October. And I mean, what can you say about like a new currency to Magic Online? You know, we saw the impact of play points last year, as Nathaniel kind of went over when he talked about redemption. And this year, like Treasure Chest, they were like the, I don't know if it was a big mass sellout scare of the year, but it definitely, it raised some attention of people selling off their collections.
It was the one of this year. It was the mass sellout of this year. There's typically one a year.
Okay, but you would say that it was definitely impactful of people selling their collections.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And if you remember, originally treasure chests were not tradable back in October when they were announced. But now we've been able to trade them for, I think, 2 months now, because I think it was like mid-November when they switched it. And we've seen treasure chests and pack prices kind of plummet. I think they're under 2.5 tickets now. So I don't know. What can we say about this new currency? And like, I'm still shocked that they did it. And
yeah.
I'm scared at what it can possibly do as well. But we still haven't seen treasure chests through a new set yet. So that's one thing that we haven't seen yet. So kind of like what I was alluding to with the redemption, there's a lot of juggling things that we're just uncertain about. We're looking for a stable system, and this treasure chest really threw that Magic Line economy under the bus for being stable, because this is a whole new thing that we have to get used to. We'll see how card prices are going to be.
A lot of other online card games use a different economic system to Magic Online, and that's basically no trading. And what happens is you'll win booster packs for events or doing well or just even playing, hitting certain goals. Hearthstone and Eternal are going to be my big examples over and over again for this. And you will pretty much automatically open the booster pack. You don't even have a chance to do anything to them. You just open the booster pack and you get the cards and you play with those cards. And sometimes there's an online system that lets you junk the cards for a quarter. I think in Hearthstone's case, it's a quarter of their value. And then, you know, junking four rares will mean you'll get any rare in the set. And that's how their economies work. And Magic Online has the opposite. It has like a complete free market with trading, with buying, with selling. And there's an argument over which one is better for a business. So Magic Online obviously has free trading, and they randomly brought out a currency that is really reminiscent of these other games. And originally they weren't going to be tradable. You could only open them. So it's like they're trying to become one of these other games, and they think that market is better, but they still have their free market at the same time. So they don't really mesh that well. And on top of that, there was a bit of an uproar, because if these were just tacked on the prizes as additional prizes, you'd be like, that's fine. I don't want them. I don't necessarily need them. But if they want to add a little bit of extra value by having these surprise treasure chests, that's absolutely fine. But I know my uproar was they took away booster packs from queues and added these. And then you have to hope to win the lotto every once in a while. And this was before they were tradable. Now they're tradable and we see their prices fluctuating wildly depending on how much their contents are worth kind of combined. But in general, wasn't a fan at the time. Became a little bit of a fan because I enjoyed opening them on stream for entertainment, and a lot of people did videos of it. My only YouTube video to ever do well involves me opening 50 of these things. But in general, still not a fan. It's a weird alternative currency, and it's turned from, in their minds, what was just a extra prize that they can, you know, control more than the tradable currencies, into just another tradable currency now, which we have four of, if you include packs. Sorry, I don't know. I still don't like this. I still don't like where they're going. What do you think, Nathaniel?
I know that I don't like it. I think that they've been popular, at least in certain ways. You know, Dave, you mentioned you've opened them, and it's fun to open them on stream. It is a booster or a thing that you can open without totally losing your shirt online, which is rare. I'm not sure that's enough of a reason to keep them around, but you know, it is what it is. We did see them as a mechanism with which to get cards like the Commander cards and the Conspiracy cards onto Magic Online. I don't think that went particularly well. I think you guys would probably agree with that. You know, initially it was not enough supply to keep up with the demand. Prices were extremely high. The EV of the treasure chest as a result was extremely high. That has since reversed. Those cards are mostly worth nothing now, as are most things on Magic Online. And we've seen what they've done to the prices on cards and what you know, no increase in demand does to just continuously increasing the supply online of a card. If you look at it, like, say, the ports, which are down from before the announcement, maybe 260 or something, they're at, like, 160 now. Black Lotus, I don't know what it was before the announcement, 110 maybe, 120, and now it's, you know, in the 90s somewhere. All the prices of the cards in the treasure chest be depressed pretty significantly. You've seen the EV come down of the treasure chest by, I don't know, 30%, 40% maybe from its highs. And it's kind of what I was worried about, which is, you know, eventually that EV is going to keep going down and down. The value of the treasure chest is actually higher than the EV. But, I mean, if the EV goes down, you got to think that the price of the treasure chest goes down. And so what are they going to do? They got to put some expensive stuff in. So they find the expensive stuff and put that in the treasure chest boosters. We saw what happened to, and I didn't predict this, but we've seen what's happened to Kaladesh booster prices, which was more or less fixed once they changed the play points, which they've basically undone with these treasure chests. It creates, I mentioned it earlier and Connor liked it, so I'll say it again. It creates, you know, some instability in the market because you don't know what's going to get included in the treasure chest next when they shift things out, and it makes the values of the cards really uncertain. And that is a scary proposition for anyone who wants to spend money on this game, which is a very expensive game as far as games are concerned and as far as Magic's competition is concerned. And if you are investing in something that is perpetually dropping down in price significantly because you yourself, the game maker, are monetizing the secondary market by using these treasure chests as the prizes to your events, that's not a sustainable system. So I don't know what the internal view has been. I suspect it's probably a lot more positive than I am sounding about it. And I think that is a mistake. I think it remains a mistake. You know, I think eventually it hits some sort of critical mass where people are like, listen, I can't, you know, the prices just keep going down. They keep switching in the expensive cards on, you know, from the treasure chest. And then it starts to affect Constructed and how many people are playing Constructed, how many people are holding cards. And then it's a bad cycle. And it makes me think that either they don't understand that that there's some ulterior motive. I've heard they want to make everything worth nothing so that we can go into digital next without much outcry. And I mean, like, it's definitely a conspiracy theory, but it does fit in with the narrative of what is happening and what will happen, because it's just basic. I mean, we're talking about basic economics where you're introducing unlimited supply of these cards with no increase in demand.
Yeah. Can I ask a question though? Like, yeah. When these were introduced, people were excited. They opened them. They made videos about them. Hasn't this died down though a little bit? Has the special, like, the special feeling of opening these, hasn't that like died down a little bit? Like, will that help a little bit? Because I've seen some prices kind of steady out a little bit.
Well, you mean will it help in terms of not having additional supply come into the system?
Yeah, because like it would probably be like less. Well, see, it's hard to say. It's hard for me to ask this question because I don't know what's going to happen when the new set comes out, and it's going to be good. Maybe the treasure chest will be really good EV just because they want new packs from the new set.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know. Like, are people going to be opening these as much later on? So like, are we going to see that unlimited supply, or are people just going to trade these off?
I blame Saffron Olive. It all seemed fine. So he opened all his treasure chests and did great. And Chion did it as well. And no. The problem is, I think people in general on Magic Online, we've alluded to this for other things, that people purchasing Magic Online cards, they're not savvier, they're not more business smart, but they're more aware of what their collection is worth and how to grab some EV. Mostly because there's a lot of people who talk about it, but mostly because, you know, a lot of them are grinders, a lot of them are trying to, you know, do a bit better at Magic. And the one thing was, as Nathaniel said, for the first while, the EV on these were actually really good. And I think the majority of videos you'll watch of people opening these packs had really good results. If you, I don't know if I'm just watching people get lucky or the initial EV calculation was wrong, but I seem to see people open packs, and because of the high cost of Commander cards and the big things like Lotus, Liliana, Port still being worth so much money at the time, it was very hard not to be making good value on opening these. And that's going to happen again if pack prices picks back up, if they rotate a couple new cards in and let the price of all other cards recover while their demand goes back up. Then this is just going to happen again and again. At the start of the new treasure chest rotation, cards are going to be worth a lot. Packs are going to be worth a lot. People open them like crazy. And then when they're not worth opening anymore, they're going to sell them. I think it's going to keep going. It's just cyclical. It'll keep happening again and again. People will stop opening them when opening them isn't worth it anymore. And that's what actually sets the price of these.
I mean, I think that the price of a treasure chest has always been higher than the actual EV of opening a treasure chest.
I don't know. I got certain EVs told to me on stream. I didn't keep too much of a price on it. And maybe all the people I saw opening it, maybe this is just, you know, bias. But all the videos I've seen, all the people I've heard doing it, just had really high EV to opening these. I don't know if the EV calculation was wrong. I don't know if they couldn't calculate maybe the price of the commander cards, because some of them weren't priced at the time of some of these EV calculations. So I don't know if that counts.
I mean, it sounds a lot like confirmation bias to me, but...
it could 100% be confirmation biased. And, you know, I also know... I know I put out my video just off stream, so people know that I didn't fix it. But certainly some people could have, you know, waited till they got a good run of packs to put that on YouTube. Because no one's going to like watching you do nothing and no packs are worth nothing. Yep. Everyone gets excited if you open big cards. I'm not blaming anyone in particular on that, by the way. That's something that could have just happened. But initially, it was, as I said, it was also really hard to calculate in the EV of commander cards. And I didn't know how people were doing it. It looked like people were just guessing what they were going to be worth because none of them had been sold yet when this calculation had come out. So maybe that's what threw off the initial calculations, because I know a lot of the big cards that people opened were stuff like Leovold, for example, was worth like 90 ticks or something stupid initially. And I don't think people would have put him at that much on their initial calculations. And there was a couple other obscene cards that people... Like, there was a couple of the commanders that are now worth less than a tick. They were worth 20 ticks because, as you said, there was the 100 people that wanted to buy them and an extremely small amount of demand for a very... supply for a very small amount of time. And now they're worth nothing
because there's no demand. I mean, it's all supply and demand. And, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I hear what you're saying about it fluctuating, but, I mean, you can't introduce new supply continuously without introducing new demand and not have prices just completely fall off the face of the planet.
Yep.
So I don't think there's any plan to increase. I mean, obviously they want to increase demand by getting more people online or whatever, but it doesn't sound like a comprehensive plan here. It sounds like let's do treasure chests. That's a fun idea. And then they do it. You know what I mean?
It's a really weird point. Like, going back to like one of our older episodes when we talked about them going back to old standard, and their reason was like, it's familiar. Like, we know what's going. We know how this goes. And it's like, you know, something like this. Like, we're gonna do something new like this. We don't know how it's gonna go. It's probably gonna be bad. It's like, what?
The other scary thing about this is they had finally, you know, there's a lot you can say about play points and whether you like them or not, but finally it had seemed that the price of packs had stabilized. There was a change, which I don't think we talked about yet. There was a change in the way that you could pay into Magic Online events, which kind of fixed the price of what packs should be worth. And it kind of seemed to work. It was lower than we had expected, but the packs seemed to be stabilizing. They hadn't moved in a while. Now, there's always at the end of a sets or relevance when it could dip very low still, and we didn't see how the market reacted to that. But everything seemed to be going a little bit better. And then all of a sudden, they put booster packs into packs, which they weren't originally there. They were play points originally, and they were afraid that was going to make the price of chests go down because, you know, no one actually wants play points. I know that sounds bad. People can enter events, but bots don't want play points. So it means bots wouldn't want to buy the packs for as much, for as much either. And all of a sudden, people opened the chests, and packs became worth nothing again. Chests, which were, you know, introduced to help them control what prizes are worth, have all of a sudden made prizes of events worthless again because they plummeted the price of Kaladesh packs really prematurely. So that is another really negative thing to come out of treasure chests. And I'm afraid that if I'm maybe correct and this is cyclical and people just once packs are worth a lot again, they introduce new expensive cards, people just open chests again, and then they'll crash the price of packs again. And then when I enter a PPDQ, even if I win, I'm going to be down packs. I went 4-1 out of PPDQ and I was down packs the other day. Down ticks the other day. And that's ridiculous. I went 4-1 at a highly competitive event. I didn't even break even. I'm not even asking for a profit. Just break me even and let me play the PTQ, you know? And I can't even do that at the moment because of treasure chests.
We tried to guess what how much Leovol was going to be. So I went a little high with 76 tickets, which was probably not correct.
It was right for a time.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, maybe it will stay in. But like I said, we were uncertain with how this goes. Dave, you said 55 tickets. And Nathaniel pretty much guessed right, 40 tickets, because it's pretty much stabilized around like 37, 38. So Nathaniel, you win the Price is Right of Commander Treasure Chest speculation.
Yeah. We'll have to get a trophy.
If you think about it, I should probably have the best record on that sort of thing. Otherwise, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But then again, I don't know. I don't follow prices on particulars all that closely necessarily. So it could have been anyone's game. But
all right. Well, moving on, we are going to go to our number one most impactful change of 2016, which, of course, it has to be leagues.
I thought you were going to say starting this podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we had a huge effect on the economy, of course. No. So, yeah, leagues has to be number one, of course. Leagues was the big thing that started this year, which was like, it's hard to think of. Before 2016, we did not have there was leagues long time ago, before my time. I didn't even know what they were.
The original league.
Apparently, they were awesome.
They were awesome.
So, I don't know if you can call these leagues. These are just kind of like new Hearthstone-style events, basically. But they started this year, which is hard to think about the time before that. You know, the big constructed events were 8-mans, 2-mans, and dailies. Dailies was like the big one, but they would take 4 hours to play 4 rounds of Magic. And we go back to all the way, this is how it kind of panned out. So the beginning of March of this year, we got Sealed Leagues first. So Sealed Leagues was like the first test run. And then the end of the month, pre-release has changed from Sealed Leagues and Swiss Drafts. And then April, we had the sealed multi-stage leagues, which I don't think those even exist anymore, do they?
Yeah, it's still a thing. It's still a thing. That's what the friendly leagues, the sealed leagues are.
Also in April, that started the competitive standard leagues, which has been kind of the norm. So Modern followed the next month. Legacy leagues followed in June with the whole like Legacy Festival promotion that came out. And then finally, most importantly, of course, Draft is Wizards' bread and butter, particularly for online. And it's the league that caused the most controversy is Draft Leagues, which is still very recent. That was back in September. So it's only been a couple months. That was actually when it was before Kaladesh came out, because I remember we were drafting Eldritch Moon and Shadows Over Innistrad. So that was the first time we got to draft under this new system. So what do we think about leagues? Obviously, they're awesome. You get to play more matches. But what do we think about this change and how it has impacted Magic Online?
Shock horror, the thing that we've been asking for I don't know.
Years?
5 years, is the most successful thing Magic Online have maybe done ever. this is people have said, I didn't, Nathaniel played during original leagues. I did not, I came in after that era of Magic Online, so never knew this. New dailies were my bread and butter when I played. And the only reason I wanted these was because I played Hearthstone, and Hearthstone Arena works similar to how they're kind of introducing, they're slowly bringing in how Arena works, where you can take more than one loss, and however wins you have, at many wins you have at the end of it, you get prizes, and it caps at like 12 wins, I think, for Hearthstone. And obviously for Magic, where we play things and, you know, 3 wins, we do 3 rounds for these small events.
And for our listeners, which events are they doing that for? To remind our listeners. Sorry to put you on the spot. It was either for the flashback drafts or for the standard gauntlet. It was one of the two.
I'm pretty sure it was flashback drafts.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because we're doing kind of like Swiss, quote-unquote Swiss flashback drafts. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was new draft. Sorry, apologies. Yeah, the new, it's really similar to the new flashback draft structure, which is kind of like single elimination, but you can take 2 losses, essentially. Like, your first loss is free. You get a freebie. You lose once, you're fine. It's your second loss, you're knocked out of the event. So you can still go 3-1 in the new flashback drafts, I'm pretty sure, and still get the prizes as if you had 3-0'd. And Hearthstone is the same. It doesn't matter how many losses you take, as long as you get to 12 wins, you get the maximum amount of prizes. But that's what I wanted. I wanted Hearthstone drafts to be a Magic Online, and I thought it could make them a ton of money. And, you know, other people have been asking for leagues forever because they played when leagues were around and thought it was one of the most fun thing. But mainly taking everything out of the equation, this is a way in which us addicts can consume competitive Magic ad nauseum. Hmm. You just play again and again and again, and I'm going to a GP, I'm going to play 600 games of semi-competitive to competitive Magic, because I've heard some people say leagues and Magic mean nothing, but I still think they're highly competitive. There's a lot of very good players in them. They're at least as competitive as your day one at a GP, if not more so.
Yeah, Legacy leagues are tough.
Yeah, I think Standard leagues are really tough, and I think only really good players are doing well in them. I've had a friend who has been out of Magic for a while. He used to try and play very competitive Magic. He played a lot of dailies on Magic Online when he used to grind it. And he thinks that leagues and the way you can test so often and play competitive events so often on Magic Online now is one of the best things to happen to Magic, period, in the last 5+ years. There's a lot of things in Magic in real life as well happening around competitive play that are very negative. The PPTQ system and stuff like that is making it harder and harder for people to consume competitive Magic in real life, especially in small places like Ireland. And all of a sudden, Magic Online comes up with this thing that just lets me, you know, not only competitive, there's friendly leagues and there's friendly drafts, just lets me play infinite Magic. And dailies didn't. As much as I thought I'd miss dailies and dailies slowly dying out and getting just consumed by these leagues, I don't miss them at all. And it, like you said, it's hard to remember a time when this isn't how I played Magic Online.
And even watch Magic too. I mean,
yeah.
I remember watching people do old dailies. It's just like, oh, they win a match, you know, in 10 minutes. Oh, they have to wait 40 more minutes to get to this daily. Okay.
Yeah, let's draw some pictures. Let's play Pictionary.
Let's jump in 3 more drafts or something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. It's been fantastic for streaming.
Leagues, I don't dispute that they are one of, if not the most impactful change of the year. You mentioned that, you know, or maybe Dave said it, people have been clamoring them for them since they've been gone. They're not really exactly the same, but it's, you know, it's one of the big marquee things about Magic Online that you can play when you want and you're not just sitting around waiting all the time. So it is not surprising that they are completely and utterly popular. I think one of the more interesting things is it seems like whatever setup Magic Online has, leagues appear to allow more play for less system stress so that Magic can make more money. Magic Online can make more money, have more throughput without having the server stability issues that have plagued Magic Online for its entire existence. I think as a result of that, as a result of their popularity, the fact that the system can handle them significantly better than they can handle large events, we'll definitely continue to see, you know, depending on what happens with a new build or something like that, we'll continue to see these be the sort of wave of the future of Magic Online. And because they highlight the time factor, which is such a big factor for so many people, I think it is and will continue to be one of the most impactful things. As Dave's friend mentioned, that since, you know, that has happened to Magic in a long time. So yeah.
It's insane. The last draft I did, an hour. That's it.
That's crazy. That is
the
crazy.
Whole draft. Like I just couldn't imagine that. And like, you know, before, if I wanted to play Constructed, I had to like, one, find what time the daily was, which was like annoying in itself. Like when I get home, oh, is this daily? Does it start at time? Oh, I have to figure out time zones, all that, you know, junk. Now don't have to worry about that. I've played way more Constructed now that leagues are available. Oh, they're so good. They're so good. And I want to ask you guys a question too. Did you think before 2016, did you think leagues were going to come? Because like they had been rumored and they're like, oh yeah, we'll do it for this year. But they had been saying that for years. Like, did you think it was actually going to happen?
No. Never.
No. I did not.
This is also one of the only things where I can point out and go, this has definitely made more people play Magic Online. Like, there's just statements from people who didn't have accounts because they didn't have the time to do a draft. They never had the time. They got home. They can't dedicate 3 hours to sit down to play an event. People who used to play there, like, were back, or people who never played because of time, their time being consumed. They're like, yeah, I gave it a go. Now when I get home from work, I do the draft for half an hour. And for the rest of the week, the 2 times I come home, I finish a game. That's fantastic. That's exactly what you need a game to be. And you can't compete with other games in the current market, which you can play for 5 minutes. And a big thing about Hearthstone and Eternal, you can take out your iPad, you can play, you can take out your phone, you can play for like 5-10 minutes and put it away. And that's not something you can do with Magic. And finally, it has something to compete with other games with on that front. Just one of the only things I can say on the list and over our whole time as a podcast, just 100% fantastic. No complaints.
Those are a high praise from Dave.
Yeah.
No complaints at all. Man. Yeah, I mean, I think for my closing thoughts, I would reiterate the I think the monetary impact that these will have on Magic Online and WotC in particular, I think are very interesting. And I think it'll be interesting to see sort of how the business model evolves, because I do think maybe if they get a taste of these sorts of things, which are like, yeah, if you, you know, provide people what they want, you have a product that will make you so much more money than it's making you now. And perhaps if those types of realizations hit, then maybe we'll get the client that we really want that can really make Wizards much more money than they make now. And I think that they make a fair amount now as is. So when you see them almost seemingly starting to panic because growth is slowing for, you know, Magic paper or the business generally or the game or whatever, you see the types of cash grabs that are being made and the types of decisions to try to stave that off with the standard showdown and stuff like that. Look to what you have in front of your face as to how you can make your shareholders more and more money and satisfy your player base at the same time. So I think this is one big eye-opening, hopefully eye-opening experience for WotC to see how successful the leagues have been and to see what if the future may hold for Magic Online for the game.
Very well said. I think that's a good way to conclude our top five most impactful changes for Magic Online in 2016. It has been quite a year. But I don't want to end the show on this list. I actually wanted to do kind of like inspiration from Limited Resources. They kind of do a sunset show kind of for sets, and they do different categories they vote on. They kind of reflect on different certain sets when they go away. And I kind of wanted to do a little kind of like sunset show for the year of 2016. So I picked a few categories that we can kind of rattle off here and see what our favorites and least favorites were for certain things. So we'll start with Deck of the Year, which Nathaniel and I assume you meant Band Company, right? You wrote Coco.
Yeah, I mean, Company started out before Band Company in other lists as well, but Band Company was the iteration of Standard where it was just everywhere. But it was a presence before that, I think.
Yeah, and Dave, you actually had my number two, because I actually almost considered Naya Aetherworks, but I don't think we've had enough time to consider that as big of a deck as something like Band's Company or your choice. Which what is your choice for deck?
My choice was Modern Eldrazi. It's hard to put down which one is the exact best, because, you know, that format became so inbred that they start playing versions that just were designed to beat the mirror, but I'm gonna say the one that I think it was Channel Fireball brought to the Pro Tour. Was it Fireball? The one with the main deck chalices.
Yep.
That essentially rendered half of Modern useless. This is probably the most dominant deck of the year. Probably, I'd have to see, but it has to be up there for most events won in a year. There was a weekend with 3 GPs. Was it 17 of the top 8 or something like that?
Whichever. I mean, it led to a ban right away. So, yes, you cannot definitely did not deny the impact that it had on Modern. But it also had an impact on other formats as well, which is I think it's really annoying because I'm tired of seeing that deck in Legacy and Vintage. Like, it's shown up everywhere. In Standard, it's kind of seen fringe play.
Because it's cheap too,
As Nathaniel said, it's a cheap Legacy deck. It's also great. It's supposed to beat Miracles. I haven't played with it myself, but it beats a lot of the combo decks by just, you know, turn 2 Tautnotsy or turn 3 5/5 Trampler is good in every format, no matter how you draw it up. Yeah. It's not, at the moment, it's not having the biggest impact on Standard because there is a different Eldrazi monster taking over Standard at the moment.
Yeah.
But it saw play in Standard. There were Smasher decks. There was an Eldrazi deck in Standard. It called for an immediate ban. It made decks unplayable in Modern. Not just bad, not just 80%ers, but like Burn and Infect and stuff like that. decks that are extremely good now just became bad because Chalice for Simeon Spirit Guide, Chalice for one go was a play. Turn one, mimic, turn two, Totnot, Seer, swing for eight was something that was, you know, not hard to pull off. That's a normal hand. And it also, for a lot of people, showed that Wizards did not care enough to test about Modern. There's a back and forth. Do Wizards test about Modern? Some people have said no. Some people like Aaron Forsythe have said yes, but only a little bit. And I think this one proves, without a shadow of a doubt, they do not, and they do not care.
Right.
They do not care about non-standard.
And the response to that, which we saw, is no more Modern Pro Tours. So yeah, we'll see how...
I was just going to say that. It was like... It's your fault. You wanted the Modern Pro Tour. Now we're not going to do it. See, now you know why we. It's like they punished us with the Modern Eldrazi situation.
How dare you find the best deck? How dare you?
I'll end this category by saying I'm actually kind of glad that the deck stuck around after the banning of Eye of Ugin, because like Wizards, like, oh, we feel that like when we ban this, it'll still be a viable deck. And most times we're like, yeah, right, Wizards, right. It's going to still be viable, but it still is. So I'm actually happy that it has, because, you know, I don't like when complete archetypes are just kind of like wasted, you know, when you ban a card. So I'm glad that like those cards are still going to be, people can still use them, obviously in other formats too, but in Modern in particular. So I'm happy to see that. So moving on, we're going to go with our favorite and least favorite set of the year. So Nathaniel, why don't you start us off?
All right. Not to steal your thunder, but I think I have the same as you. I'll start with my least. It was maybe Eldritch Moon that is my least favorite set because I hate the storyline so much. I hate that the Eldrazi came back. And I hate that's after SOI, which I think was the best set of the year, was so well done. Like everything about it, the art, the flavor, everything was super well done. And then it being Eldrazi really, really, I thought was a huge letdown. So I think those two combined for my favorite and least favorite sets.
Mm-hmm. Shadows was definitely my favorite. I know I don't think Dave had the same favorite, so I'll talk about Shadows just a little bit. I love all the cards for Constructed. Avacyn might be the only mistake, but I thought all the other cards were pretty balanced. Cards like the Nahiri and Mindrag Demon, they're good like role players in Standard environment. And yeah, it's kind of annoying that Nahiri shows up in older formats with the old Emrakul. It's shown that it's pretty slow to get off the ground, and you know, putting the Emrakul in your deck it comes with a cost as well. So I feel like we've kind of adapted to having Nahiri in older formats. So I'm pretty happy with that card in general, and I love all the limited mechanics in Shadows. Clue tokens almost made my favorite mechanic of the year, which we'll discuss in a bit. And Return of Madness was awesome. I was a little skeptical. I'm like, is it going to work great? And same thing with Delirium. I was a little skeptical with that starting out, but it turned out to be awesome in Limited. It's a slightly annoying in Constructed, mainly because of Emrakul. But other than that, I thought it was an awesome mechanic. As far as my least favorite set of the year, it's OGW without a doubt. This set almost ruined Magic for me, and that's... I'm not being hyperbolic. I'm serious. Like, I do not like Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher just in general. I just don't like cards that take the fun away of deck building. Those are just kind of like two cards that go in the same deck, four of. It just kind of makes it easy. It's kind of like a good comparison. It might be like Death Misbarrapter and Den Protector. It's like, yeah, decks that you play green, you just play that package. And it just kind of ruins kind of the fun of Magic and the exploring of it. Wasn't a fan of any of the limited mechanics either. Another card I don't like is Kozilek's Return. I wasn't not a huge fan of that card. Decks would play it without even playing red. I just don't like that. And the Devoid mechanic didn't carry over well into OGW. I thought OGW made it better draft format, but it just, I don't know. It just didn't resonate with me at all. Obviously, the bans didn't help. I thought Kozilek as the big Eldrazi in the set was kind of a flop as well. But that'll do it for my ranting on Oath of the Gatewatch. So, Dave, what were your favorite and least favorite set?
My least is Oath, and I'm not going to go into too much detail because I think you hit a lot of the points I'm going to hit. And I think just if BFC was a little bit older, it would be BFC is awful. It was a bad draft format. It was slightly better than BFC, but not by a huge margin for me. It had some really broken cards, though. I'm a big fan of Kalathas, and he is Oath, right?
Yeah, and I actually do like that card. That's kind of like a weird outlier. Also, sorry to add it to this, I hate mostly art in the set. Like, I don't like the art of most of the Eldrazi. I mean, that BFZ had a little bit of that. But also, Oath, for some reason, they introduced the colorless mana symbol. I don't know why they introduced that into battle. So it's kind of unfair that Oath kind of gets that, but...
Yeah, Displacer is something I've had to play against in Standard for a while. Reflector Mage, all this...
Oh, rubbish. Yeah, Reflector Mage, yep. I don't like Reflector Mage either, so...
But my favorite set has actually been Kaladesh, and that's because I rate sets a lot by draftability, and Kaladesh has been one of my favorite sets to draft. It's super deep. There's lots of archetypes. Aggro, control, mid-range, all playable. It has one of my favorite things, which is Discovery. I think it's really crap to look at a set, know what's good, and that stays good the entire time. There's a bunch of cards I thought were bad at the start that are good. There's a bunch of cards I thought were good that end up being bad, and you got to explore. You got to do your research. You got to do your due diligence to the cause of getting good at the format. And it was really enjoyable. Along with that, I thought they said this a lot while advertising the set, so maybe it's just burned into my brain. But I love the bright art and the bright background. You know, a lot of Magic sets are doom and gloom and heroes finally overcome the odds. There's very few Magic sets where everything starts out happy and good and cool, and you're just exploring a world. So I like that. I like the art. A lot of the cards printed from the set, besides Aetherworks Marvel, I think are great. Even Marvel, I think, is a mistake, but at least it's a cool reach of a design. I think there's a fundamental...
I would have to disagree with you, but I'll go with that. I'll talk about that when I... voted as my least favorite card, but continue.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. So Kaladesh, I think, gets my vote for favorite set of
the year. That was a close number two for me. I like it. It's an original set. It's not one of these stupid return sets that I've kind of feel like they flopped. Although that's why I think why I was so high on SOI is just because it was a return set, but it was like finally a return set where I think they did it right. I think most return sets have been pretty weak. Ravnica, I didn't like. And Battle for Zendikar I thought was really bad as well. So generally the return sets have been pretty poor in my humble opinion. I thought Kaladesh was just something new. All the mechanics were great. And like you said, draft format, I'm still drafting it. So much fun. So yeah, so I spoiled my... We'll go over our favorite and least favorite cards. So I'll start with Aetherworks Marvel. I'm just tired of these kind of cards that cheat big creatures into play kind of cards, you know? This one's almost worse because you get to cast the card. And I'm just tired of this design. Like, it hinders the possibility of other big creatures being printed in future sets in Standard, kind of like when Snapcaster was in Standard. Like, Wizards had to be careful what spells were in the format, so that's kind of why I don't like that card. There was a lot of contenders for least favorite card, but I think I had to stick with that one. Emrakul was a close second for me, but my favorite, it's kind of a weird one, it's Marionette Master. So the six drop from Kaladesh that, like, it has fabricate, and I believe it's when a artifact goes to the graveyard, opponents lose life equal to the power of the master. I just love the design of this card. Obviously, it's like it goes right into one of my commander decks, so that's why I love it. But it's also like an interesting, like, limited card as well. It gives you like choices. It's not a slam bomb, I wouldn't say. Dave, it's not like a bomb, right? I haven't played master? Too much with it. Yeah.
Yeah, Marionette Master is a bomb.
Okay, you would say it's a bomb?
I think I'd take it over any uncommon.
Sure.
Is it like that? Is it a top 10 card in the set? No, I think I would take it
over
any uncommon that would be extremely happy.
Sure, and I'll say that's why I like in my bombs. It's not the Inferno Titan, like over the top powerful.
It's not like Starship Pain or whatever it's called.
Yeah, Sky Sovereign or something like that.
Yeah, it's not that. Yeah.
So I think that's why it's my favorite. Obviously, casual implications. I just like the design space of that card. It gives you... I like cards that give you choices, and why I like the fabricate mechanic as well. So who would like to go next?
I'll go. My favorite card of the year, no secret, one of my best results at a GP with it, Gitarog Monster. I think the card is super cool design. The best Magic cards, I think, are when you look at it, you see the art, you read the name, and its effect matches it. It's that top-down design, right? You want a card to do something, you create what the card is, and then you create what it does. And this was perfect. And I think was just pushed enough to see a little bit of play. It didn't have to be broken. Unfortunately, this card isn't my least favorite card, but Ishkana has made him unplayable. Any deck that plays green and black, you want Ishkana in the deck. Ishkana is one of the best creatures in Standard, one of the best creatures printed in a long time, and stabilizes boards. As much as I like Gitarog Monster, the card advantage he gains, and just in general how he plays as a card, he's really cool. He is not comparing to the Spider Queen and her spider babies, and has been completely pushed out of the format. If Ishkana didn't exist, I am convinced this would be a decent role player in Standard. Least favorite, and this is from a competitive point of view, it was a complete 50-50 toss-up between two cards.
And it is cheating. That's cheating.
It is cheating. I think my least favorite, if I had to go into my head, choose one, is Spellqueller. And this is strange for me because I usually love tempo-orientated decks and cards. But he has been annoying, extremely annoying, in two different iterations of decks. That one of them is a tempo deck, and I don't mind it as much. But the first one was in company decks, when your opponent would cast a company in response to you casting a spell, and they'd hit Spellqueller and get your spell, and they'd hit Reflector Mage and, you know, bounce your guy. You felt like you haven't played Magic. Now, that's also down to the card collected company, but all these dumb cards and dumb decks, I feel like, got pushed over the top by Spellqueller and its ability to shut down cards that shut down those decks. You know, certain spells, even discard spells later on in the game got Spellquellered. And even cards like Tears of Valakut, that's meant to attack the other deck that it's troublesome in, Blue-White Flyers or Blue-White Flash. You know, Spellqueller eats Tears of Valakut because it doesn't counter spells in normal ways. It has weird interactions with Eldrazi Displacer. It was really dominant in two different decks. Again, the weaknesses that Blue-White could have, cards getting under it and attacking Gideon, they are fought by Spellqueller, and your opponent can leave up mana, and it could be Queller, or it could be an Avacyn, which also has Flash, and it's just a nightmare and shores up so many holes for these decks that had very dominant runs. So how about you, Nathaniel? What was your favorite and least favorite?
My favorite card was Aetherflux Reservoir. I have not seen it played in a deck yet, but I think its time is coming. But I love alternate win condition cards. I guess it's not
technically I love those too, yeah.
It's not technically an alternate win condition, but it's a sort of a interesting way to get to a win. I just dig it. I dig the card. My least favorite was Emrakul, not because of how it's kind of warped standard a little bit, but just because I just hate that it is in that block. I really, really disliked that was the end result. I thought it was a really bad storyline, and especially given the fact that we just had the Eldrazi, I thought it was super lazy. So I don't mind the card that much. And in fact, the Mindslaver effect and Mindslaver the card is definitely up there for one of, I think, the coolest cards ever conceived. So I don't mind that part of it. When you pair it with Etherworks Marvel, and I think Dave was kind of going into, like, when you have Coco and you print Spellqueller, like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, when you have Stoneforge Mystic, why are you printing Batterskull?
Right.
What are you thinking?
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of forces upon us, and it's not like that's one mistake. It's just like you made a powerful card and then gave it all the things it needed to succeed. So I think, you know, the big, powerful Eldrazi, the Ulamogs, and the Emrakuls in combination with Etherworks Marvel, and Etherworks Marvel saying that it's cast instead of, you know, put onto the battlefield or whatever. I mean, obviously they're intentional decisions, but... So I don't necessarily mind it that much as far as the card and the things it does in the game, but I really disliked it from a storyline standpoint. And I'm not even a storyline guy. I don't really care what the storyline is. But
Nathaniel, Tamiyo put him in the moon. If Tamiyo, the moon sage,
yeah,
put the monster in the moon,
yeah,
and if there's a more ham-fisted piece of storytelling in fantasy ever, this has to be it, right?
Well, what, I mean, especially bothered me after SOI, which was so good. It was so well done. Everything,
yeah,
about SOI and the story and the flavor, and I, like I said, I'm not even that kind of person, but I think that's what makes Magic great. And, you know, the people that appreciate that, I think, bring a lot to the community and to the game-making process. So I loved SOI. It was so good. I was so excited. And then EMN, just, come on, be better, was kind of my my mantra during that period. So anyway.
All right, yeah, let's keep moving. Favorite and least favorite mechanic?
My favorite for the year was Delirium. I'm a big fan of Madness also, which was reprinted, but I don't want to count that as a reprint. But Delirium, I kind of like graveyard interactions. I like subtle kind of graveyard interactions. So, you know, you're playing your normal spells, normal things are happening in the game, and you gain incremental advantage. And Delirium did that, and it asked you to sometimes be a dedicated graveyard deck, which I think is cool. They had a lot of decent enablers. A lot of cool cards came out of Delirium. I think they balanced it right. I think Ashkana, arguably a little bit too powerful, but if it is, it's only by a smidge. It's only by the tiniest margin. And again, she could be played in decks that either are dedicated Delirium and, you know, pumping out Mindrak Demon into her, into Emrakul, who's kind of an honorary Delirium card, or it could be in mid-range decks like the Aetherworks Marvel deck, which isn't trying to exactly get Delirium, but Green Vessel just gives Delirium so easily that it can play Delirium cards. My least favorite, and this is a reprint of a mechanic, because I think there's been a lot of good mechanics this year, so it was hard to find one I disliked, but I really dislike Transform. I really dislike Transform. I think it plays out well in the design space, where this card gets to do so many things, but a practicality standpoint, I think it's terrible. I think I hate how it changes the fundamentals of draft, yet it can't be programmed onto Magic Online, so you draft differently on Magic Online. And it's different at the Pro Tour because they didn't want to give people unfair advantages, but you have to draft differently at home. I hate that I can't play with the sleeves I want because I have to check if they're opaque. And if I miss that they're opaque, I can get a game loss at a GP. And I hate these practicality things. I hate that the alternative is playing these cards in my deck that aren't cards, that are the, what are they called? The
checklist cards.
Checklist cards. I hate that. I hate having to look if my opponent has checked the right box. And if they haven't, they're going to get a game loss because they could be cheating. All these little things that come in. So while the double-faced cards, I think, are cool in theory, I think in practice they cause a lot of problems, and I dislike them a lot.
So I'll go with my favorite and least favorites. Kind of alluded to it before. Fabricate, I thought, was my favorite by far. I just love the choices it gives you. Wizards has tried to do this kind of mechanic before. I think in Theros Block, it was called Tribute, and...
Yeah,
like I think that was like the other end of the spectrum how it failed. You always chose like one mode for Tribute, but for Fabricate, there was so many different times where you would choose either to make the servo or you put the +1/+1 counter. Like there's always that choice with Fabricate. Like maybe Glint Sleeve Artisan was like the only one where I would always make a token usually, but like a lot of the other ones, like the 2/1 flyer, like there's so many different times where I either make a token or make it a 3/2 flyer. Like I just love that choice and flexibility with Fabricate cards, because sometimes you want more artifacts in your deck and sometimes you want more +1/+1 counters. There's a lot of like both of those mechanics matter in the set. I just love how it fits into the whole set. And my least favorite is Surge, which was kind of a forgettable mechanic from Oath of the Gatewatch. Obviously, no surprise. I just hate everything about Oath of the Gatewatch, and I thought the mechanic just made blue and red just like worse. So it was just kind of a forgettable mechanic. Doesn't see standard play at all. We'll never see standard play.
One card. Upheaval Octopus.
Yeah. It's the kind of mechanic where you can't make too powerful, and that's what I don't like about it. It's just like, it hinders their design space of it, so they can't push it too far, and I just feel like it's just too unforgettable. It wasn't that fun either, so that's why I chose Surge. It was hard to figure out a bad mechanic for this year. Meld was probably one of my like least favorites. I thought it didn't really hit home. I actually thought that's what you meant by transform, but Meld would be my second least favorite.
Yeah, I hate that the Meld cards are big. I like Meld online because when a card is Melded, it's the same size. I hated that GPs coming over the tables and there was this big novelty sized card in the middle of the table. I'm like, this looks so bad. What is happening?
So my favorite was Madness. I love Madness when it first came out, and I love it today. I think it makes things very interesting. I think it adds a unique element to drafting in terms of getting the enablers, the right mix of enablers, and then cards with Madness cost. So definitely my favorite. I thought it was interesting Dave chose Delirium, and Delirium reminds me of Threshold, which came out the same time as Madness, when you have to have seven or more cards, and then creatures that have Threshold or things that have Threshold do extra things. Reminds me a lot of Delirium, so... I don't know if this is a mechanic, but I ended up not being a big fan of the new color of the symbol and how that was rolled out. And
I wasn't sure if I was going to have that one either.
Yeah, I'm going to use
what she did with Surge.
I think we can count that.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I'm going to use it anyway, regardless whether you guys let me. So, I didn't like it. It seemed really kind of lazy to me and. Almost trying to create a six color, but not, you know, changing this thing that is fundamentally worked one way to kind of fundamentally work a different way. I mean, it's cool that they can adjust everything on Magic Online, to then use those symbols, but you know, a little silly too to have to. Like,
no, I that was one of my least favorite things too. I didn't like the artwork of the symbol either. I just didn't.
Yeah,
and we're stuck with that symbol forever now. Is what I hate. We can't even forget about it. So that symbol's just, instead of the colonial symbol from now on, that symbol exists.
All right, so let's wrap it up here. I kind of want to like meld all these topics together. So I want to give everybody final grade for Magic in the game as a general, and then final grade for Magic Online, and then kind of your own personal, how was your 2016 and what you were hoping to do for 2017. So I guess I'll go first then. My final grade for Magic Online was actually higher than Magic as a game, interestingly enough. I gave Magic Online a 6, while Magic as a game a 5. This year kind of really took me back down as a, like the game as a whole. We talked about, you know, masterpieces, cash grabs, too many sets, coverage of this year. I just thought nothing was very memorable in compared to like years past. And we just didn't have, it didn't seem like we had that big tournament feel like we had years past. So there was no Vegas. There were no 4,000 people GPs, which maybe Magic is going away from, which is, I guess, good and bad. But it just, it coverage, I think, Dave, you alluded to, you wanted to kind of discuss a little bit. I thought coverage kind of like less events, it kind of had a big impact on me. There's just less excitement for me in the game in particular. And like I said, Oath of the Gatewatch, it's it comes in again. It really took a big for me. I actually thought I almost quitting Magic when the set came out. So part of it was Splinter Twin got banned and I was really mad about that set. So, and then having to play against those Eldrazi in Legacy so many times and I have to warp my deck around it. Just, it always comes back to that. But as far as my 2016, obviously I'm going to write a post about this actually, that, you know, a lot of people say 2016 was really bad. You know, Carrie Fisher recently passed away as well, which is a huge bummer. And there's also political reasons people were upset about 2016. But for me personally, 2016, it's a year that I'm never going to forget. It's the year I got married and it's the year the Cubs won the World Series. It's just, I will remember certain days of this year for the rest of my life, which is kind of interesting. And we started this podcast, which I'm really, really happy about. And I'm really excited for next year as far as where this podcast goes. And I'm going to be starting another project soon, too, which is going to be really fun.
Sweet. I think my final grade for MGGO this year, I'm going to settle with a 5 and out of 10. Out of 10, by the way, not out of 100 or something. I think that it's made a lot of improvements to economic infrastructure and exploring spaces in which it can be better than real life Magic, and there's some innovation there. At the same time, it's really hard to overlook some glaring mistakes they've made with basic economics, some lack of transparency in other places. And finally, and this can never be overlooked, the software itself, the program, is still just terribly outdated, not up to scratch compared to other games. And until they improve that, it's going to be very hard to ever give them higher than a 5. I think a 5 is still a higher rating for them. I think they've made improvements this year compared to last year, but still a lot of improvements to make. MTG as a whole, 2016, I gave a 6. Maybe thinking of it a bit now, it's a little high. As pessimistic as I am on the podcast, I am very high on Magic as a whole. I've played it my whole life without being very good at it and have aspired to make the Pro Tour for a very long time, even though I've come up short. And it just shows how much I love it. And through all the things I've done in my life, it's one of the only constants I've held. But I think being in Ireland and being in a small community and year after year seeing more and more things taken away from my competitive scene, the PPDQ introduction, almost as Connor said, the PPDQ almost made me quit Magic. I know this wasn't this year, it was last year, but there was no improvements on it. There's nothing being put in place when Nationals was taken away and PTQs were taken away and stuff like this. I thought we would get more competitive outlets and we just haven't. That's why I've had to turn to Magic Online. That gave me some positive stuff, that gave me this podcast, but it's still very bad for our community where I'm finding a lot of friends I made through competitive Magic are dropping off. On top of that, Ireland got a PT this year, but hasn't got a GP. In fact, there isn't even a GP in England where we could easily reach it. The GP next to Ireland is Prague, which is a decent flight and a lot of money for us to fly to. You know, I got my hopes up all year. I was really confident that Ireland or England next to us would get a GP the weekend before it. And, you know, I could fly out to that and then I could come back. I could visit the Pro Tour and stuff like that, but no dice. The excuse I was given over Twitter by Helene was they couldn't find a venue. You know, so there have been a lot of negatives to competitive play personally for my country, for my community, for me. But on the other side, I've liked a lot of the sets. I've liked a lot of the gameplay. I've enjoyed competitive Magic over the last while. I've enjoyed, as much as I didn't get results to them, I've enjoyed a lot of GPs and what TOs are trying to bring to GPs recently, even though the prices are a bit outrageous. And overall, 6 out of 10 for Magic. Goals and resolutions. I really want to get partnership. I'm still pushing hard for this. Over the last week, over Christmas, I've let my stream schedule slip a bit just because I've been enjoying my girlfriend having a couple days off in the Christmas time, but definitely going to get partnership, hopefully in the first 2 months of next year so I can make a good run at it. And my other goal, and this is going to be harder to keep up with, so I'm not going to call it a strict resolution, but my other goal is I'd like to get a piece of content out every day of the week. So this means that I'll be streaming 5 times a week. I'm trying very hard not to let myself get lazy and skip days. I'll be doing the podcast, which will not count as a separate piece, but a piece of content I'll be doing every week. And hopefully I'll be putting out 2 videos, 1 Wednesday, 1 Sunday every week as well. So if you enjoy my voice somehow, you can get a piece of Dave every day of the week going into next year.
So for my final grade on MTGO, I gave him a 5. And it's felt a lot like, I wouldn't say 1 step forward and 2 steps back, but certainly 1 step forward and 1 step back. You know, I think there's definitely some good stuff that happened, some encouraging signs. There's definitely some, I think, discouraging signs as well. And obviously, you know, I think stuff related to the economy, some lack of transparency about Digital Next and what's going to be happening to Magic Online, I think are bad enough that pretty significantly hurts my grade. You know, there's some other stuff like, you know, we had the player advisory board and, you know, we had our own critiques of that. And like, I've not heard a single thing about the player advisory board since it was announced.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that for honorable mentions that we had. But yeah, that's kind of why I didn't want it on the list. It's just because
we don't really know
what's going on with it.
Yeah, which is like, I mean, I didn't necessarily love all the selections, or not that I had any problem with the individuals, but just like the types or the niches that were being filled with the selections. But if, you know, just kind of a meaningless, seemingly meaningless, I mean, maybe they get consulted constantly, we just don't know. But that seems like a huge PR miss if that's the case. So I'd be curious to know what happened there. I had, you know, we talked about the CEO stuff and like there's some excitement like, oh, it's somebody that, you know, knows digital, at least maybe not digital gaming, but knows digital. So maybe Magic Online will get a boost, and maybe it's too early to say, but I think ultimately it comes down to the top 5 stuff that we talked about, and really the leagues made such big strides for Magic Online in terms of its profitability, the number of people that can play, the mock system was a step in the right direction, but, you know, combine that with, you know, treasure chests and the redemption changes, which I think are both pretty detrimental to the game, and we got me sitting at a lukewarm 5. As far as the grade for Magic the Gathering generally, I gave it a 7. Though I have a caveat, which I'll explain, but, you know, I think that the sets generally were pretty good. I think, you know, Wizards doing kind of what they do well. My caveat is that I think some of the decisions they're making as far as being scared of slowing growth are, I think they've done well. Like, some of the cash grabs have worked out okay. Like, the masterpieces are actually pretty cool. But I don't think you can consistently come up with cool cash grabs like that. And so I think they just need to accept that you can't grow forever and that it's okay, you know? So, and if they do need to, they feel the need to grow, then I think they're looking in the wrong place for growth, and the right place to look is Magic Online, which I think ultimately could and should be the powerhouse, you know, cash cow of Wizards moving forward. So I think the cards were all good. The sets were good. Kaladesh was great. Love how they wove inventions into it. How they, you know, have the flavor. I thought SOI, as I mentioned, was good. OGW didn't bother me too much. You know, obviously the modern stuff was kind of some shenanigans, but overall, I think that they're doing well. They're making good cards. Generally good decisions. Not everything's a home run, but I don't think we can expect everything to be a home run. And I think one of the bigger detractions was the sheer amount of stuff that they release, sets and supplemental sets and all that stuff. So I think that needs to come down. And I think that kind of falls in with my caveat of like handle the growth aspect of your business better than you are, because, you know, knee jerk reactions and stuff like that are only going to hurt the game. So hopefully that'll be better managed. Maybe the new CEO will kind of tame that down a little bit. I don't know if I have any. I haven't sat down to consider my resolutions extensively. 2016.
Well, yeah, start with 2016. Yeah.
All right. So 2016 was a great year personally. You know, Card Hoarder is doing really well, and our paper business is doing really well too. I'm excited to work every day, which is cool. And, you know, I see big things for the future there. And it's, you know, it's always kind of the dream to work and do magic related stuff for a living. That has been very exciting for me. You know, I think one of the bummers is like I stopped streaming for a variety of reasons, just, you know, for temporarily. And then I haven't mustered up the energy and the time to get back into it. So I'm not sure what that means for 2017, but I haven't streamed in, I don't even know how long, 2 months maybe. So that was a bit of a downside, but, you know, I guess it's good because work is busy and that's always a good thing too. So for 2017, I mean, obviously I hope Card Hoarder continues to grow and do well. I'd like that its growth has allowed us to do some stuff for the community that isn't about making money. So I hope that we can continue to find more things like that to do in the future.
So great stuff all around. Great year. We'll say goodbye to 2016. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Card Hoarder Podcast. So I want to mention before we leave, don't forget about upcoming events on Magic Online this week. No flashback drafts until the new year, where there's going to be triples in the car. I think it's the first week in January. So we'll let you know about that. But also for premier events this week, there's a sealed Mox Monthly on Friday, Modern PTQ and Power 9 Challenge on Saturday. You can always contact the show at cardorderpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if you have any questions, suggestions for the show, any critiques. You can also just contact me personally on Twitter at Connor P. O'Donnell. So where can I get a hold to you, gentlemen?
They can get me on Twitter and at DaveC89, at S-E-A. And they can get me on Twitch at DaveC as well. No 89 on that. Streaming 5 days a week.
For me on Twitter, at Card Hoarder is typically me responding. And if you want to have a lengthier discussion, typically email is the best, Nathaniel@cardhoarder.com.
You can always find the show every week on cardhoarder.com. Hope everybody has a good New Year's Eve. Stay safe out there. So have a good 2017. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.